This season is not going to be completed. I'm going to predict that MLB season will be canceled sooner than later. Here is why. There's no bubble. There's no bubble. We have a global pandemic going on. These guys don't have to be constricted to a bubble. They're traveling. We don't know what they're doing when they're not playing, but then they come around each other and play.
When Major League Baseball faced its first major COVID outbreak 2 weeks ago on the Miami Marlins, it laid bare a truth that was reinforced by the news out of college football yesterday. That sports in the age of coronavirus is really difficult unless you build a bubble. Now MLB may have finally gotten the message, but the question is whether it's too late. Today, ESPN's Jeff Passan joins us to discuss the pros and cons of baseball's possible postseason bubble, as well as his profile of the breakout star of this baseball season, the Padres' Fernando Tatis Jr. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, August 12th. This is ESPN Daily. Jeff Passan, you have two very pressing pieces of MLB reporting that I want to discuss with you here. But first, I need to ask about you and specifically your kidney stones. How is all that going, or how did all that go, I guess, more specifically?
Well, it went, and that's a good sign.
Thank God.
Yeah, listen, there are a lot of things in life that don't live up to the expectations that people talk. Kidney stones live up to expectations, and they live up to expectations in all of the worst ways.
Jeff Passan is a baseball insider for ESPN, and he's been truly playing hurt over these past few days.
Well, Jeff, speaking of medical crises, speaking of finding safe passage, you recently reported a real big story that really stuck out to me. Major League Baseball has had preliminary discussions about conducting the postseason in some sort of bubble environment, perhaps multiple bubbles, similar to how the NHL is operating, which would be a huge development and shift away from their currently tenuous unbubbled approach. So what is the latest here?
The latest is that this is in its early stages, Pablo, but I think that MLB understands that holding a postseason in a non-bubbled environment is awfully tenuous. And that as much as MLB wants to complete its regular season, what it really cares about the most is its postseason. Major League Baseball made a bet this year. And that bet was that it would be able to complete a full postseason and the $1 billion-plus dollars in television revenue that's going to be coming in from it would be used to help pay the players the salaries that they ultimately were given by Rob Manfred when he mandated the 60-game season. And without that $1 billion-plus dollars in television revenue from the postseason, all of a sudden, Major League Baseball teams are bleeding red even more than they have been already.
Now, one logistical hurdle would seem to be how playoff teams would quarantine or isolate before entering the bubble.
Yep.
How could baseball build in that time for isolation, Jeff, between the end of this ostensible regular season and then this postseason?
I don't know, Pablo. It's a really good question because already by expanding to 16 teams, Major League Baseball has crunched its calendar and given itself really no margin for error in this situation. The playoffs start after the regular season ends on September 27th. There's a day off in between, and then they go right into three-game series. The home team, you know, home team in quotes, would be playing all three games at its home, so you take out the travel there. Well, in a bubble format, there really is no advantage to being home except that you bat last. And it's why, you know, a couple of people with whom I spoke about this said the idea could be that you play the wild card game at home and then starting in the division series when you've gotten rid of half of the teams, when you're down to just eight teams, you go to a bubble type environment where, say, the National League is playing two games a day at Dodger Stadium and the American League is playing two games a day at Angel Stadium. That is a reasonable plan, it seems like. But if you do that starting then, you have 8 teams traveling in potentially from around the country. That's been the issue with baseball from the start. It just has not figured out how to do the logistics well enough to make a bubble a reality. And honestly, it's what plagued the initial bubble concept that baseball was floating back in April.
And in this new bubble concept, there are also these competitive balance issues that could arise. I mean, Chicago in October, very different place than San Diego in October, for example.
Mm-hmm.
How does the league handle that concern?
Maybe this is just me and my good weather bias talking. Southern California just makes the most sense for this. It may be that there's a terrible coronavirus outbreak in Southern California at the beginning of October. But as we've seen with the NBA, if the sanctity of your bubble is strong, what is happening in the outside world does not matter. The NBA's ability so far to go weeks at a time without a single coronavirus case in its bubble, I think, is a testament to how well planned this thing really was and how seriously the players and staff and everybody involved are taking the protocol. I tip my cap to them, and I tip it having seen what happens when you do not take protocol seriously with the Miami Marlins and the St. Louis Cardinals, and now with Zach Plesac and Mike Clevenger with the Cleveland Indians. Like, it is very easy to run afoul of some of these rules in place. They may seem draconian. They may seem overbearing. They may seem unnecessary. But the fear for Major League Baseball, Pablo, is that one positive test could potentially waylay everything. If one person tests positive and he happens to have been within, 6 feet for 15 minutes of 3 other people, well, let's say that it's the New York Yankees and Aaron Judge tests positive and he's within 6 feet of Gleyber Torres, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gary Sanchez. All of a sudden, the New York Yankees are losing 4 main players for potentially the entirety of that short series. Mm. They could conceivably, if this happens in the division series, have to cancel games, if they're worried about the spread in the clubhouse, if they've traveled somewhere together. All of these things lead to a catastrophic scenario where the baseball playoffs is a house of cards, and all it takes is one player, one team to make the entire thing fall down.
And so in reality right now, we are seeing the teetering of something like a house of cards, like this Jenga tower, and the latest team to pull blocks from that tower, as everyone is screaming at them to not do so, is the St. Louis Cardinals. So the Cards had their doubleheader, Jeff, this Thursday against the Tigers postponed. So they will have missed 15 games, which is a quarter of this season already. What are the concerns about the credibility of the regular season as things stand right now?
There are significant concerns, and the significance is more in the how do we pull this thing off and make it credible than anything else. At the beginning of this, the idea of this 30-man alternate site where every team would keep a taxi squad of players in reserve was seemingly good and thoughtful and reasonable. In practice, it has not turned out to be that. The St. Louis Cardinals have no desire to take their healthy players at their alternate site and put them on a field playing major league games. And Major League Baseball has acceded to that. But if they don't play enough games, it's going to be awfully difficult to tell the 4 other teams in the National League Central that the Cardinals, by virtue of their winning percentage, are going to get in even if they've played 20% fewer games than you. I've had players reach out to me already saying, this isn't fair, this isn't right, we're grinding, we're following protocols, we're doing everything the right way, and you're telling me this team that didn't, that very clearly didn't in a number of ways, is going to be rewarded for playing fewer games? Rob Manfred has a really difficult choice coming up, and I think that as soon as the Cardinals get back on the field, we're going to get a decent sense of whether this is even going to be an issue. Because as one person said to me yesterday, this may just take care of itself, because the notion of playing as many games in as few days as the Cardinals are slated to right now makes winning that much more difficult.
So Manfred is out here saying recently that he believes the protocols in place have been effective. But you just before referenced what's happening in Cleveland. And Jeff, you've seen a lot of weird baseball punishments, I imagine. But putting Zach Plesac in a rental car that he gets himself and having him drive himself back to Cleveland because he was one of two pitchers that they had to quarantine because they violated protocol during the Chicago road trip. What exactly happened there?
What happened, Pablo, was young rich men doing what young rich men do, which is thinking that the world is theirs, that there are no consequences for their actions, that they can speak out about one thing and act another way. And Zach Plesac got caught coming back to the hotel in the wee hours of Sunday morning. Mike Clevinger did not get caught because he did not go back to the hotel.
The perfect crime.
Let's put it this way. He got away with it until they started doing the investigation into things. And he got away with it to the point where he actually flew on the team plane back Sunday. And it's funny because Mike Clevinger had talked on July 30th, I believe, about how trust matters and how it's important. Exposing an entire team potentially to the pandemic is a pretty wretched thing to do. But doing so when Carlos Carrasco, your teammate who fought through leukemia to come back and pitch last year and has said all this season, I want to be out here for my team. I understand that I'm a high-risk person with comorbidities. Flying on the same plane as him, there are people in the organization who are incredibly mad at Mike Clevinger right now and with understandable reason.
So, Jeff, when you turn back to what's actually happening on the field, do you have a major takeaway from this first quarter of the season?
That anybody who can achieve in 2020 has my respect. If you, as a baseball player, as a basketball player, as a hockey player, as a football player, as an athlete, as a human being, are capable of facing all of the things that are going on in our lives, in our country right now, and saying that I'm going to do my job even better than I did before, you have all of my respect. Charlie Blackmon hitting 480 in the pandemic right now is like hitting 670 in real times. Like Shane Bieber going out and striking out 43 guys in four games, it's like striking out 80 in four games during real times. And to see some of the things that these players are doing right now, it just gives me more appreciation for them, not just to achieve highly, but to do so in a moment that is so disruptive to the actions that they typically take to be great.
All right, coming up, let's talk about your latest profile of the player who's been the clear breakout sensation of the season thus far, the Padres' Fernando Tatis Jr.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Tatis drives one to deep left field. He drives one to the moon. High, deep, and very gone.
Wow. That's mucho cuidado right there.
Think he knew he got it?
Oh, he's really good at baseball.
So, Jeff, I want to talk to you now about going viral in a different sense, because you profiled the genuinely dynamic and genuinely fun Fernando Tatis, the 21-year-old Padres shortstop, in the really great ESPN cover story you wrote that's out this week. And this is, I think, for the annals of expense report history. You even got to go to the Dominican Republic to do this story. So what did you find in the DR?
I couldn't have done this story, Pablo, without going to the DR. When we say that baseball is everything in the Dominican Republic, it's difficult to conceive of how true that really is until you're there, until you're walking around different neighborhoods and you just see stickball games going, until you go to academies. And, you know, baseball, a sport that has really turned into a country club sport in the United States, is the antithesis of that in the Dominican Republic. It is played by everyone, and it is played starting at young ages, and it is big business because these academies where kids drop out of school at 10 years old and start training for when they're 13 or 14 and teams start showing interest and coming to handshake agreements with them. That is life in the Dominican Republic. And Fernando Tatis grew up in a little different sort of life than that. He didn't have the hard scrabble upbringing. You know, the year he was born, his father hit 34 home runs and two grand slams in one inning.
Seeing that play almost every day was pretty fun. That's a big part of me falling in love with the game, and it was an advantage for me.
This is somebody who grew up with privilege and could have rested on his name and, you know, signed with a big league team because of that. But he was never that way. He was always moving. He was always working. He was always loving baseball. And the joy that has translated to his game right now is absolutely infectious. And he is just so much fun to watch.
El Nino, you are unbelievable.
He is a sensation.
When I play the game, I'm playing my game. So why not have fun and just have a great time with my teammates?
And as somebody who loves baseball, I don't say that about a lot of guys. It's almost like you have your NBA league pass rankings, right?
Yeah.
My MLB TV ranking is Padres number one every night. And considering the longtime man crush that I have had on Mike Trout, that is saying something.
Yeah, no, Mike Trout is somewhere hopefully listening to ESPN Daily. Please subscribe, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, Mike Trout. And he's feeling bad, Jeff. But let's put it in context, too, with Trout, because Major League Baseball basically publicly was begging Mike Trout to be more marketable. But here we have young Fernando. What is his potential on that front?
Limitless. And it's limitless because he backs it up with his game.
This kid's like a PlayStation character, hitting home runs, leading off. It's incredible.
Like, it's not just that he's got personality and he's got the desire to do that. It's that he's a genuinely likable person and he's funny and he's a good looking kid and he's got hair that it would look terrible on me, but I still have big time hair jealousy with him.
Same.
And he's bilingual, and Major League Baseball is a sport whose core audience right now is 55 to 65 year old white men. That's just the truth of it. And that is not a demographic that advertisers are often flocking to. To have somebody who can appeal, and not just appeal, but speak to the Spanish speaking audience out there that is growing in numbers throughout this country, is just another added factor that makes him a potential bonanza for baseball.
Fernando Tatis Jr. doing it again.
So much fun to watch.
Unbelievable.
So far this season, and really in the 100 or so games he's played in the big leagues, all Fernando Tatis Jr. has done is back it up.
Yeah, and he is also backing up the legacy that his father, Fernando Tatis Sr., had cemented around a decade ago. And you referenced the special moments he had in his career. So what does Fernando Jr. have to say about carrying on that specific Dominican baseball lineage of his dad?
It's his dad. It's a city who he grew up in, San Pedro de Macorís, and it's the country. The reason I felt like I had to go down to the Dominican Republic for this story was to get a better sense of what being Dominican means to him. And it means everything. You just see it in the way that he carries himself and how he talks about his country, his countrymen, his country's sport, and what he owes it. And I think that this was illustrated best, Pablo, a couple years back. The Dominican Winter League is maybe like March Madness down in the DR. Fernando Tatis Sr. was managing the team Estrellas Orientales down in San Pedro. And Estrellas is this team that is a lot like the Chicago Cubs and the Boston Red Sox. Like, they are in this city that has been called the cradle of shortstops because so many great shortstops have come out of San Pedro. But they had not won a championship in 50 years. So Fernando Tatis Jr. joins the team and is one of its best players. And there's a late season game, and it's the ninth inning. And because, you know, Dominican baseball is still something of a throwback, there are runners on base, and Junior is up at the plate, and Senior asks him to bunt. And he fails to execute the bunt the first two times. I will always, in my heart of hearts, believe that it was on purpose because he wanted to swing. Because on the next pitch, he hits an absolute rocket out to left field.
Conecta, batazo elevado a lo profundo del jardín izquierdo, la bola chocó contra la pared. Se acabó el juego, amigos. Ganaron las estrellas. Brillan, brillan.
And he cradles the bat, two hands between his legs, and does like a granny style bat flip chuck into the air and is screaming as he's going around the bases. The stadium's going nuts. It helped Estrellas clinch a playoff spot. They end up going to the Dominican Winter League Championship, a best of nine series, and win it in six games. And the party in San Pedro after that, where the Tatises were at the heart of it. It was just an incredible father and son moment. And, you know, the day that Junior signed, Senior wore a T-shirt to the ceremony, and on it, it said Tatis Dynasty. And that's how they look at themselves. They look at themselves as dynastic. And I asked Junior what the sigil would look like if they were an old royal family. And he said it would be four baseballs, one for his grandfather, Fernando's dad, who made it to AAA with the Astros, one for Fernando Sr., who had a good big league career, one for Junior, who's on his way potentially to a Hall of Fame career, and one for his brother Elijah, who signed with the Chicago White Sox last year.
So, Jeff, the only natural way to wrap this interview then is to ask you if you've contemplated what the Passan family sigil would be.
It would be one sad, lonely kidney stone.
But thankfully, outside of Jeff Passan.
Thankfully, much like time, Pablo, it has passed.
Jeff, thank you so much for delivering in all of the ways.
Thanks for having me, pal.
Coming up, yesterday was a historically disruptive day for college football. But in another sense, it was also just more of the same.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with the smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. History will show that the Big Ten and Pac-12 conferences officially canceled fall sports on August 11th, which just happens to be exactly 5 months to the day since Jazz center Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID and shut down the NBA, with the rest of sports shortly following suit. This bit of symmetry is shocking for two reasons. First, March 2020 feels like it was 50 years ago. And second, despite that perceived eternity, I'd like you to think about just how little has changed since then. Because the biggest reason multiple Power 5 conferences are giving up millions upon millions of dollars remains the exact same reason the NBA did the same. A pandemic is spiraling wildly out of control. And 5 months later, our country still doesn't have an actual national plan to stop it. The difference in college football, of course, is that the sport is so decentralized as to empower something between a difference of opinion and denial. The NBA shuts down, meanwhile, and every team must shut down too. But not Michigan coach Jim Harbaugh, who had his team practicing yesterday afternoon after the Big Ten's announcement, like a general who doesn't quite know that the war is over. And not Nebraska coach Scott Frost, who has already threatened to form some kind of Cornhusker autonomous zone inside the Big Ten. And certainly not the SEC and ACC's university presidents, who are now signaling defiantly that they will push forward with fall football, claiming the medical council to justify it. It would be nice, by the way, if medical council is what drives this next set of decisions. But 5 months to the day after Rudy Gobert, it feels like we're living inside a very long and especially morbid documentary. And the question I hope every one of us considers is simple. Which character do you want to be? I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.